Welcome to The Watchman, your weekly 60-minute expose on Bible prophecy and everything you need to know about the times we live, for the coming of the Lord is sooner than you think. The Watchman Conference is on at the Kampala Sabrina Hotel, Victoria Hall, starting Wednesday 22nd to Friday 24th July, 6 to 9 p.m.
They will give all their power to the Antichrist or to the beast. Their work will be to make sure that the beast controls all the world.
Come and make a balance between current news and the end times.
All these things, we want to introduce them to the political world and to the people in high places.
The Watchman Conference, the first of its kind in Kampala.
It's all a hoax, okay? I don't want you to think that all scientists don't believe in the Bible. That's what has been promoted by the New World Order, but it is totally untrue.
This promises to be a time where the Watchman will share fascinating facts on the coming of the Lord.
If you see the G8 turning to 10, then you know that we are really close to the end time. Very, very close. And this is happening very fast.
The Watchman Conference at the Kampala Sabrina Hotel, Victoria Hall, Wednesday 22nd to Friday 24th July, starting 6 to 9 p.m. For more information, call 07802925550780 2925555. Entrance is free for all.
Good evening and welcome to the Watchman. This evening we have some important things to talk about today, and one of those things is something that I promised 2 weeks ago that I would explain to you, but I was caught up because of time, so I couldn't explain it because it's kind of long. But however, I'm going to explain to you now. In as far as the Watchman Conference is on starting Wednesday next week, that is on 22nd, so it's a week away. We are a week away from the Watchman Conference. It is going to be at the Kampala Serena in Victoria Hall, that is the conference center, and entrance is free. There is no charge attached to attending, so you're welcome, all of you, to come and listen to the Word of God. And what an opportunity it is for us to understand the events that are happening in the world right now, and the preparations are ongoing. And it's a tremendous opportunity for us, and I'm totally convinced that the Lord wants us to do this for a purpose. Now, on 20th, on the night that Greece defaulted on its payment to the IMF, becoming only, I think, the fourth country that has defaulted in its payment to the IMF, that's the International Monetary Fund, and actually the other three countries are third world countries, mostly from Africa. But even countries like Uganda always pay their debts to the IMF on time. Now, when Greece became the first European or so-called developed country to default on their IMF debt, I was watching the countdown, 1 hour to Greece defaulting, and all the big, almost Armageddon-like financial meltdown that was being presented there. And I was wondering, what does this all mean? Because I'd kind of followed a bit of the Greek crisis for a while. So I was wondering, what does this mean? I was trying to figure it out and see what was the meaning of it. And so I asked the Lord, what does this Greek, so-called Greek crisis mean in terms of the end time scenarios and the things that we're expecting in terms of Bible prophecy and things like that? So I inquired of the Lord, and he actually gave me an answer almost immediately, and he told me it means nothing. So I said, how does it mean nothing? So he said that it's just going to be a temporary thing, because for a number of reasons. Then he let me understand that some things had to happen in Greece in order for the whole European Union and the Eurozone to stay put together. And I'm going to explain to you why that is the case. Because Alexis Tsipras, the Greek Prime Minister, became the first far-left leader to sweep to power in decades in Europe, in any European country. And by far-left, that means leaning towards communism. Because this is his views are actually not even socialist. They're actually closer to communist. So he became the first Prime Minister or leader in Europe who has those views in almost decades to sweep to power. And he swept to power through a very popular vote. And he won the vote because of what they call austerity. Now, austerity is actually a tightening of expenditure by the Greeks so that they may pay back their debts which are owed to the IMF, but especially to the European Central Bank. Now, those austerity measures have been in place for 5 years, ever since Greece found themselves in a position that was unsustainable, because they had been taking a lot of debt and they were not earning as much money. So it's just simple economics. You're earning 1 million a month and you're spending 1.5 million. But because there is somebody who is willing to give you the extra 500,000, you survive on that for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, and somebody is continuing giving you that money. Then at some stage the person says, look, I am not going to give you that money unless you demonstrate to me how you are going to pay back all this extra 500,000 I've been giving you every month for the last 5 years. So he says, now in order for you to manage to pay that back, and since your income has not increased, it is still 1 million, and this person is now demanding for their money, he says, in order for you to be able to pay back that 500,000, you're going to reduce your expenditure from 1.5 million to 500,000, 500,000, so that now you start paying back my money. So that after 5 years, you've paid back my money. I hope you understand that now. Then this person says, I cannot survive on 500,000. It's not possible for me to survive. Then the other person says, but I need for you to pay my money. Now, when that became the case, somehow Greece accepted austerity, which means being forced into a frugal expenditure, a regime in which they had to increase VAT and to get more money from people, and then cut down on the expenditures tremendously in order to start being able to sustain their debt. Now, when that happened, the Greek people, of course, suffered. Retirement age was increased. Actually, now it has been increased to 67 years. That is incredible. It was 60 years before. Then it came 65 years. Now it's been increased to 67 years. Now 67 years retirement, that is really high. And that means, and then pension funds were slashed drastically, because that's usually where the government has extra money on people who have been paying up to get their pension. Of course, so pensioners were so unhappy. And other measures were taken all across board to make sure that, number one, Greece spends less, number two, that they earn more through taxation and things like that, so that they can pay back their debtors. Now, after 5 years of that, of course, everybody is squeezed, they are unhappy, so they try to look at a political solution to an economic problem. Now, that's never a good idea, because it doesn't happen that way. So what do? Alexis Tsipras, who is currently Prime Minister, comes and campaigning, saying that he's going to end austerity. Austerity meaning he's going to end those tough measures to pay back the debt. So that's a very popular message across board, pensioners and, you know, civil servants and all those people who have been suffering as a result of all the cuts. So they vote him into power, and he comes. Now, that's a very big challenge for the Eurozone. Number one, if Alexis Tsipras fulfills his campaign pledge, it means Greece might have to withdraw from the Eurozone, and there was even a possibility of them withdrawing from from the European Union, of course, although that was a bit remote. But they could withdraw from the Eurozone. By Eurozone, it means from the countries that use the euro as their currency. Now, because these countries use the euro as their common currency, they have to follow certain guidelines. Now, I'll give you another example to help you understand. Because the value of the euro is the same across all European countries, apart from Sweden, Norway, and Britain, every other country uses euros. That's the so-called Eurozone. With exception, all those other, France, Italy, Germany, and all those use euros, and it's the same value of a euro. Although the currency is actually kind of different, because, for instance, the Greek euro has, they let you print things which are of importance to you, so it looks different from the German euro, because the German euro will have things like the Berlin Wall, for instance, and the Greek euro will have things, from their history, but it's the same currency and can be used across the board. But because of that, now Greece has to follow certain very stringent measures to be a part of that Eurozone, because they cannot devalue their currency and do other things that would help them recover from, to help them basically paper over the cracks, so to speak. I'll give you an example. If we have economic issues in Uganda, for instance, and there is a shortage of money, the government of Uganda can decide, as a matter of last resort, to print more money. if the government here decides. However, if we are using a common currency in East Africa and the same currency is being used in Kenya and Tanzania, then the Ugandan government cannot decide to print more money because the currency affects Kenya and Tanzania. It's the same currency. So for them to print more money, they would have to agree, Uganda, Kenya and Tanzania, and maybe Rwanda and Burundi if they are part of the East African community, for any such measure to be. So if Uganda messes up their economy, the other countries will say, you have to put your house in order, you are not going to destabilize our currency in order to come out of your crisis. I hope now that makes you understand. So Greece finds themselves in Europe finds itself in a scenario. If Alexis Tsipras, who is the new prime minister, who is a far left person, which means something tending to communism, if he succeeds in putting those measures in place, then the European Union and the Eurozone is going to suffer. Why? There are so many other countries that have been indebted and are in some kind of austerity. Ireland is one of them, the Republic. Spain is the other. Portugal is the other. Italy is the other. Almost all of those countries are kind of feeding off Germany, because Germany is the biggest creditor in the whole Eurozone, Germany and France, but especially Germany, and to a much less extent France. So now if people discovered that by voting somebody who is communist, we are going to sort our problems, in other words, this guy was telling me to spend less money to pay back the debt, I can solve that by just voting that, you know, him out of power. Wow. So it was up to now the leaders of the Eurozone to show Greece that regardless of what they do, they are going to have to pay that debt. There is not going to be a political solution to the economic problem. So now they sit in meetings. Greece is approaching their deadline of paying IMF. They need money from the European Central Bank. So they go and sit in the meetings, which were Vienna and, you know, places like that, Strasbourg, and Brussels. So they go and sit in the meeting. And the Eurozone presents, the European leaders, finance ministers present to Greece what they expect Greece to do as part of a continuation of the austerity, so that they continue being able to recover from their debt and get on level footing. But remember, there is a prime minister who won a vote promising that he's going to bring an end to that. Now he goes to the negotiations and they are telling him there is not going to be an end to that. There is only one solution. You have to continue with the austerity. So the prime minister is caught literally between the rock and the hard place. So what does he do? He walks out of the meeting with the European leaders and says he's going to go to vote. He's going to go to Greece and ask people to vote on whether they should accept the European terms or not. And he actually urges them to vote no, to vote to dismiss the European terms. Now, that was putting a move that was risky, in that if he had if it had worked, then European leaders would find themselves in a very tough position. So they had to make sure it does not work. So he goes, says people should vote no, dismiss the European conditions, we're tired of austerity. And of course, you know, the common person says, no, we are voting no. But of course, people who have a sense, the elite, the people who have a sense of economics, realize that the no vote is going to put them in serious trouble, because right now Greece is in absolute crisis. Everybody is entitled to withdrawing only 60 euros from the ATM every day. That's the maximum you can withdraw. The banks are closed. You can only get live off 60 euros a day. Now, that's slightly just over 200,000 Ugandan shillings. Now imagine if everybody was forced to live off 200,000 Ugandan shillings, regardless of how much money you have in the bank. Even if you have billions in the bank, sorry, the banks are closed. You can only live off 60. Now, some people, I'm sure, that's even less than their energy bills for a day, or just their food bills for a day, some rich people. But anyhow, so there's that crisis. So those people vote, let's accept the European terms and continue with this austerity. But of course, the majority of the Greeks who don't understand what's going on vote no, so the no vote wins by 60%. So now, the European leaders say, okay, since you've decided to throw out our terms, we are not giving you money, and you need money to open your banks. The bank, and even the 60 euros a day, the banks are running out of that money. And they need money from the European Central Bank. And the European Central Bank will not give money unless the European finance ministers agree on a date and the restructuring of the payment to Greece. So now Greece finds themselves in trouble. They voted no, they are celebrating, but the banks are still closed. People are still living off the credit cards are not working, because even restaurants are insisting on cash, because their suppliers of food are insisting on cash, because if you use plastic like before, credit cards and the money is going to the bank and you can only withdraw 60 euros a day. So cash is running out. There's a crisis across the country. So the European leaders sit and say, okay, since you voted to dismiss our terms, now we are waiting for you to come because you need us. So eventually Alexis Tsipras, the Greek Prime Minister, decides that he has to go and talk to those people. So they tell him that come up with terms and show us how you want to pay back this money, because he's thinking they are going to cancel the debt. And they say, we are not going to cancel the debt. Debt cancellation is out of the question. You have to pay back the money. So he comes up with terms to take to the people in the European European finance ministers who were meeting in Vienna. Here are the terms. So, and now the terms he actually comes up with himself are even worse than the ones he refused in the first place and told the people of Greece to vote against. Now he's pushed to a very tight place where he has to come up with terms which are even worse than what they were offering him the first time. So he comes up with those terms. Then he takes them to the European finance ministers. Then they tell him that no, actually, we are making those terms even tighter. And then they tell him, we've given you up to Wednesday, which is today, to pass it in your parliament. Otherwise, we are not giving you money. Now, they agree we are giving you 91 billion euros to open your banks and start operating normally, but you have to pass these terms by Wednesday. Your parliament has to agree to them. We have given you a deadline. Don't go and start dilly-dallying. Now, here, let me explain to you in simple terms what that means. I come to you and I say, I want you to give me 100,000 shillings. Then you say, I am selling my phone because I don't have money. So I come to you and I say, I'm selling this phone and I want 100,000 for it. Then you tell me, no, I can only give you 50,000. Then you say, then I say, there's no way I'm taking 50,000 for this phone because it's worth more than that. So I walk away. I take a gamble and walk away. Now that gamble means I expect you to call me back and say, okay, let me give you 90,000. But you don't call me back. But yet I still need the money and I still want to dispose of the phone. So after waiting for you to call back and you don't call back, I say, okay, let me just go and take the 50 he's offering me. Then I come to you and say, okay, you give me the 50 and I give you the phone. Then you say, no, I'm no longer giving you 50. Now I'm actually giving you 30. Then you say, man, so what am I going to do? So eventually, if you refuse the 50,000 and ultimately even take 20,000, because I say, no, then I say, I can no longer give you 50 because I actually found somebody who is, can get it to me cheaper. Then you say, okay, then now I cut down. I say, okay, you give me 30,000, I'll take 30,000. Then I say, no, I'm not even taking 30. I can only give you 20. Then eventually you accept 20. Now that's what happened with Greece. They gave them terms, they refused them. They went to a vote, they voted against. Then they left them. Then they came back themselves and presented terms of repayment, which were even worse than the ones they refused the first place. And the European leaders said, no, we are even tightening them more. Now eventually I believe the Greek parliament is going to pass those terms because they are desperate. It's been now 2.5 weeks, I believe, without the banks opening and with people limited to 60 euros a day off ATMs and ATM lines growing and things like that. So you can't operate a country like that. So now Alexis Tsipras came with all this popularity. Now today he was on television saying, this morning he was on television saying that he's been forced to accept to conditions which he doesn't believe in, but they are forced, their hands are tied and things like that. So basically he's telling the people, you voted for me because I was promising to take these things away. Sorry, it's not going to happen. Now here is the position in which Germany find themselves, who are the head of basically the de facto head of the European the Eurozone. They find themselves in a position where, imagine, there are 9 people who owe me money, okay? 9 people who owe me money. In other words, 10 people who owe me money, who have my money. Now, I'm telling them, you have to pay back my money. I want it very soon. Then one of them comes and tells me that, now, if you insist on getting this money, I am going to commit suicide. Then I say, excuse me? He says, I'm going to commit suicide. Now, deep down inside, I don't want him to commit suicide because of the money. Because I can afford to forfeit that money to save a life. But then I think hard about it. Then I say that, but if I cancel this date because this man is promising suicide, then the other 9 people are going to come and pull the same stunt, and they will also want me to cancel the date for those reasons. Then I say, no, I cannot afford for the other 9 people to also come and threaten suicide and want me to cancel the date. So I say, no, now what I am going to do is this. I am going to insist this man pays me. So I tell him, even if you commit suicide, I will come for your family and make sure they pay my money. Now, I don't quite mean that, but I am trying to send the message across board that there is no getting out of this debt. One way or the other, you are going to pay it. And not purposely for the person I'm telling, but for the rest of the people. Now, what that means is that if Greece were given debt cancellation, then Spain would demand the same, Italy would demand the same, Ireland would demand. There are so many countries across Europe that are struggling because they took money which was beyond what they earn, and all of them will come and want debt cancellation. And now the typical German mindset is that when you take money, you have to pay it. That's how the Germans are as a people. There is no such thing as I borrowed money now, failed to pay. Why did you borrow if you're not going to pay? Just pay the money back. It's like their honor. So there is no way they are going to give that debt cancellation. But now what the Lord was telling me in regard to this is that what it is going to do is it is going to send a message across Europe. That's what the Germans, the Eurozone leaders are trying to do, to send a message across Europe that we are not begging anybody. Because Greece thought that Eurozone is begging them to stay in. So if we threaten to get out, then they will cancel our debt. So they took that gamble. But the Eurozone said, if you want to go, you go. But we are not canceling your debt. And Greece doesn't want to go because they benefit a lot from the Eurozone. So they come back and say, okay, we don't want to go. That threat has been, we have removed it. Now help us. How can you help us? Then these people say, now, even the conditions we gave you, we are going to tighten them. So that's the scenario that is around. So what is going to happen as a result of this is that Greece is going to become, and it has become an example for the rest of Europe. If you think you can just, because there are votes coming up, especially in the UK. The Prime Minister David Cameron promised that he's going to have a referendum on whether they should stay in the Eurozone, or rather in the European Union, not the Eurozone. They are not part of the Eurozone. If they should stay in the European Union in 2017, they are going to have a vote. Now, of course, there are so many people in the but you know, these are things which referendums are very tough things, because a majority of the top level Britons know that they cannot afford to get out of the European Union because they have markets there and things like that, of the things they produce and the services and things like that. So it is not advisable for them to get out of the European Union. However, when it comes to referendums, there are people who know nothing about what's happening, and for them they just vote on excitement, and they are very easy to incite. And actually it's Winston Churchill who said that the biggest argument against democracy is a 5-minute conversation with the average voter. In other words, the average voters don't know what is happening. There are people who get easily excited, and somebody just comes and excites them and promises them things, and they will vote that way. They don't understand the dynamics of whether that is possible or not. What the European Union leaders had to do is to show the rest of the people where there are going to be referendums, especially the United Kingdom, that you need the European Union. Remember what happened to Greece. Okay? Now back to the other example of the 10 people who have my money. This guy comes and threatens suicide, and I tell you, even if you committed suicide, I would still come for your family and sell your house to get back my money. But I don't quite mean that, but I'm basically trying to send a message across board that you, all the other 9 people, that listen, there is no easy way out of this. You have to pay the money. Now, the other 9 people fall in line and say, now, there is no way out. We have to pay the money. That's a bit of what is going to happen. So now, the referendum in 2017 is not going to go the way of England, or rather Britain. getting out of the European Union. But what their biggest problem is, Britain, even if they're not part of the Eurozone, is the immigration. Now, that's where it hurts the people most, because when they're part of the European Union, any one of those countries, Poland and what, all those people, freely enter into the UK, and then they are entitled to benefits, and then they are, all those benefits, flats and what, those free flats and, council flats and all those things. So, and they can't, like, it's squeezing them. So they are saying if they pull out of the European Union, then they can manage their borders, then suddenly they don't have to take people from Romania, Bulgaria, Poland, and all those other countries, former communist countries, who are just flocking into Britain. Now that's the biggest issue that they have. But the leaders at the top are telling them that is a problem, but we also have benefits from being a part of the European Union. So now Greece is going to be the example for countries that are going to be there. Now the European Union actually is going to turn out stronger post-Greece than they were before Greece. Before Greece, there was this impression that Greece has to, or rather that the European Union has to beg people to be a part of them because they don't want it to disintegrate. Now post-Greece, all countries are going to realize we need the European Union more than the European Union needs us. Because in the absence of the European Union, all the cash that Greece is going to get, $91 billion, they wouldn't be getting from the European Central Bank if they were not a part of the European Union and the European or the Eurozone. That is, the Eurozone meaning countries that use the euro as their currency. So basically, that's what the law told me, that the European Union is going to emerge even stronger post-Greece than pre-Greece. So now just wait and see that unfold. It already is unfolding, because they actually told me that on 20th of June, that was the day when I was watching television late in the night, watching the news and seeing how Greece was going to default on their payment and seeing the countdown. And that's when I asked the Lord, and that's when he told me anyhow. So now you know what is happening. Greece, don't think it's part of some kind of end time scenario and what, it isn't. It's not going to change too much in terms of what's happening in the end time, but I just had to break it down for you here so that you understand the depth of it. Now, moving away from that, something else happened around that time, and I just touched briefly on it, and I'm going to touch on it a bit more right now, but I'm going to give the true picture of that, as well as a few other things which are happening in the world. I'm going to give you a good, clear picture at the Watchman Conference, which is next Wednesday. That is 1 week from now, 7 days from now, when I'll give you the clear picture of how the whole end time events, okay, are boiling down together. And we are putting together some DVDs that are going to be there, and we'll have also some, screen put, show some things before I come and teach about things happening in the news which you might have missed out on, but are happening somewhere, and they are grossly affecting end time events, very, very much affecting end time events. I mean, this is astounding, some of the things that are happening in the world right now. I'll be honest with you, and at the rate at which things are moving, we are heading very, very fast towards the soon unveiling of the Antichrist, as in where we shall all know for sure who the Antichrist is. I do have a DVD, however, in which I'm discussing all the possible Antichrists and what their biblical evidence, the biblical evidence of their Antichristship is, and why they may or may not be, and putting together some pictures and some quotes and things like that, all in a DVD. You mustn't miss the Watchman Conference. And we also have, by the way, I also have the first book I've ever published, which is which I have currently right now. I published it in Kenya, and I got the copies now here in Uganda, and we are going to be selling them at the Watchman Conference. But it's an important book in that it discusses a number of things. It's called The Rich Man Virus, and it discusses, I really can't go into the depth of it right now, but it discusses a subject on the something on the subject of money, in terms of what, how your approach on it is, and how the way you approach it in terms of the kingdom affects so many things, the way you behave. What did Jesus mean when he said that it is easier for the camel to go through the mouth of through the eye of a needle than for the rich man to enter the kingdom of God. What did he mean by that? What is the true meaning of that? I've had so many explanations, none of which made sense. But then again, I asked the Lord and he gave me some deep revelation on the subject of the rich man. And I call the book The Rich Man Virus, and you can be able to you'll be able to get it at the Watchman Conference. They will be there on sale, and trust me, it's a very, very good book for you to know. I mean, it's information that is worth knowing, and that you really have to you really have to know how it operates for you to get your mindset prepared for the absoluteness and the definiteness of the wealth transfer that we've been talking about. Last week I replayed messages of the sowing and reaping, and there were three of them. I played one last week, but some people have still not heard them. But we just replayed it because I was supposed to come here, but I wasn't able to. So the people here just got a message and replayed. But some people have still not heard those messages, so we shall also have them for sale on one CD with all three of them on sale. Also, those ones I really don't want to, because we just sell them almost at the price of what it costs to put them together. Anyhow, but so that you go and listen to them, they are extremely important. Now, if you have that and you have the book, The Rich Man Virus, which is out, and which will be out even in bookstores after the conference, but which you can be able to get the first time we are going to let out copies at the Watchman Conference, then I'm sure you'll have the right attitude for money towards this. Now, the other day I was thinking to myself, you know, just a number of things that go through your mind, and I'm saying that, I mean, the whole world is chasing after money, and I'm saying, but what do they really need for this? This rich man whom I know owns so many things. Now I was reading a story in the newspaper in which his health is deteriorating. Now I'm not suggesting that wealth leads to that, but the point is that I was thinking to myself, has he ever had time to sit down and actually enjoy his wealth, or is he just accumulating it for the sake of accumulating it? Now that's what really happens to people. When you get all these things outside of the will of God, they become a burden to you. That's what happened when the children of Israel were in the wilderness, and they got they asked for meat, and then God, because they had asked for it in a grumbling way, and they had been grumbling all along, God said, there is the meat. And when they ate the meat, it tasted like gravel in their mouth. It wasn't good. Now that's what happens when you get things outside of the will of God. So a lot of these things are very, you know, are so good when you have them with God. Now when you have them outside of God, they become a burden. So you become somebody who is just there to make money and make money and make money, and you never actually enjoy it. Now you ask some of those people, when was the last time you went, let's say, on a nice holiday somewhere and, you know, enjoyed yourself because you can afford it? But no, he cannot go because he has to wake up in the morning and count money. And that's what the Bible says, those who love silver shall never get tired of silver. Now that is a curse, because you get to a point where you love it and it's like, okay, there it is, but it becomes a burden to you in that you're actually accumulating it for the sake of accumulating it, and you never actually get time to enjoy it. Now, to the rest of us, money is a means to an end. But to people who are in this position, money is an end in itself. So he just wants to see the money piling up and piling up and piling up. And is it going to affect his life? No. You even find these people even don't eat that well. Why? Because he has to save more money, but he has enough of it. Now you, is earning a salary, can go and afford to have a nice meal. And when you've accumulated some money, you can afford to take your wife for a holiday somewhere. And you don't have too much in the bank, but you know how to enjoy what you have. So now I was thinking, what's the purpose in all this? And why must we have all this wealth that God is telling us we are going to have, and we are actually going to have it? Then the Lord told me that you're not having that wealth just for yourself. You're having it so that it is not in the hands of the wrong people. Now it's important for God that you, as a child of his, have wealth not just for the purposes of, I mean, what do I need all this money for? No, you have to have it because so that it does not end up in the wrong hands. Because when it ends up in the wrong hands, it ends up converting people into wrong things. Now, if the money is in the right hands, it is used as a tool of evangelism. As in, just having money itself is a tool of evangelism. Because, as I said before, when you have money, there are people who will listen to you, who will not listen to you if you're broke. So, it is in God's best interests if you can put your mind straight and He knows that this person is faithful in little, now he is ready to receive big. If you can put yourself in a position where you are faithful in little, now God is ready to trust you with big things. It becomes easy. Why does it? Because God says, now, if I put money in the hands of that gentleman, he is going to be an example to other people. That when you have money, it doesn't mean you're going to go and do the things that other people do with money. It doesn't mean you're going to go and sleep with a fleet of women. You can stay faithful to your wife even if you're very rich. You can be a prayerful person even if you're very rich. Now I know this person is strong. Money is not going to be able to spoil their head. Now, the moment you get yourself in that position, then you are ready to receive the greater wealth. That's what Jesus said. If you are not faithful in what belongs to other people, who will give you your own? If you are not faithful in unrighteous mammon, who will give you the true riches? Now, the true riches are those. Okay, they are deeper than just money, but they also involve money, and they involve you preparing your heart in a position where money cannot change the way you think. Money cannot change what you believe. Money cannot change the way you treat people. It cannot change what you think of God. It cannot change the time you want to spend with God, your worship and what. Now, the truth is, I know so many people, even in churches, who want to be rich, but if they were rich, they would be in hell. I mean, they would end up in hell because they are not yet ready to handle the money which they think they want. And sometimes it's even in God's best, in your interests, for God to say, no, you first wait. First get your heart straight, because the money is going to benefit you for a few years. But if you get it and you go to hell, you're going to be in hell for eternity. And you regret why you ever got the money. Because right now you're prayerful, right now you can fast and what, because perhaps you don't have the money. But would you do all those things if you had 10 billion on your account? Would you still have time to go and spend with God? Would you go 3 days without a meal because you're praying and fasting when you have 10 billion on your account? Oh, now, the way I know so many Christians, I don't know if they would do that. I know how much money has the ability to change people. Now, the reason I'm telling you this is because I want you to get the right attitude towards money. And I've spent a lot of time with God trying to teach me about how to have the right attitude towards money. Now, until I got to the extreme where I was saying, but I don't need that much money. I don't need to be all that rich, because I mean, if I can have enough to live and have a fairly decent life, and I don't struggle to pay fees for my children and things like that, then that would be okay. But then the Lord kind of impresses it on you. It's not just for your sake. It's for the sake of the kingdom. You are not getting it just for your sake. There is nothing that is just for your sake. Not even your gifts and everything are for your sake. Your gifts are supposed to work towards building the kingdom of God. And it's important for God that you use your gifts for that purpose. So now I started thinking and having my mindset straight. So if you can get your hands on the book, The Rich Man Virus, please do. It's not going to cost you a lot of money, but it is going to be a very important lesson for everybody, laity, preacher, and everybody. I promise you that it's the first book I've ever written, and there are others coming. There are actually others quite on the way, and they are all going to be interesting subjects. Now, you would expect that I would write on the subject of end time. Maybe sometime I will, but I write on what I believe the Lord is leading me to write about now. So, moving away from that. So, if maybe not moving away from that. So, in the issue of wealth transfer, we know that this is definitely going to happen. I told you that it is part of Bible prophecy that the end time church is going to be a church known for prosperity. That is Bible prophecy, and Bible prophecy has to come to pass. There is not a single chance that Bible prophecy doesn't come to pass. So there is going to be a wealth transferred into the hands of the righteous. The Bible says that. The question is just whether you are going to be one of them. But it is going to be there. And whether you are going to be one of them will depend on whether you are ready to surrender that part of yourself to God, the finance to God. Now I know some people, you love God, you trust God in so many other areas, but when it comes to one area which is very precious to you, which you think is so precious to you, you kind of want to keep God out of it. You say, now God, this one, you leave it to me, let me handle it my way. And you don't know that you're actually hurting yourself, because God handles it for your benefit. Now I'll give you an example. There are so many girls who when it comes to the subject of whom they should get married to, they don't want God to be involved. They say, there is this guy whom I love and he's a nice guy, but now what if I ask God and he tells me he's not the guy? And you're not quite ready to take God's opinion on that. So you say, you know what, God, you leave me on this one, let me do it my way. And he will leave you, because he cannot force you into anything, and you will find that you actually missed out on something real good. Now somebody was telling me the other day a story of somebody she knows personally, who I think is actually a relative, who was dating and was what in ages which so many, you know, Ugandan women think would be advanced. I think she was beyond 30, and there was this guy whom she had been dating for some time, but he was a bit irresponsible. So the lady finds herself in a position where she is the man in the relationship. You know, you ladies understand, you don't want to be dating a man and you're the man in the relationship. You want your man to be a man. So she's wondering, now if I leave him, I mean, he has wasted all these years of mine, now I'm past 30 now, you know. So you kind of cling on to that thing. Then one day she decided, let me just see what God has to say about this. So she says, God, what is your opinion? And now you have to let your heart open to what God has to say, whereby you say, okay, even if whatever you, I'm ready for whatever you tell me, this is it. What do you want me to say in regard to this? I mean, what do you want me to do in regard to this issue of my marriage and my man? Should I continue with this man? What do you think? Then the Lord told her, and I want you to know that the Lord speaks very clearly. So the Lord told her that you leave the guy. He is not going to be good for you. So she had been dating him for a while. So painfully, she took the decision to let go of the guy. Now, she had to do it herself. God is not going to do that for you. Of course, you can ask him to help you. But the point is, she had to do it, disentangle, and basically disentangle from the man and say, now, yeah, I am no longer entangled with the man. And as soon as she did that, it didn't take long before she met a very responsible man. And they are now married. They did not even date for a long time. You meet somebody, it's like he has found something he's been looking for, and you have found something you've been looking for, and you're ready. Both of you are ready at that moment. So they didn't date for long. They were married within a short time. Actually, within a few months, they were married. And even some people questioned that, you know, how can you date a man whom you've just known for a short time? But if God has said it, I mean, God knows the guy and he knows you. And God is a matchmaker. So anyhow, it's been a while. Are they happy? Yes, they are. When God is involved, you always end up happy. So now she's so glad that she trusted God with that area of her life. Otherwise, she could have hung on with the other guy who was irresponsible, and then she's the one who is being the man, and for him is being irresponsible, and things like that. Anyhow, now, I know with so many men, the last thing that you ever give up to God is the area of your money. Now let me trust God with my finance, and let me see how he does this. Now, and until you completely give it up, and let it say, okay, God, I don't like, okay, this, this is something which is dear to my command, but anyhow, I'm going to trust you. Now, until you get to that position where you totally trust God, you are not going to really see what he has promised. Now, how do you get to that position? Slowly by slowly. He's going to ask you, slowly, he's going to ask you, give up this. Give up this. Now, if you do those things, you will see how eventually they start. Now, the painful part is only at the beginning. Eventually, you start enjoying it. And you get to a point where you it's no longer a struggle for you to give up anything because you've seen how it works ultimately. It's the same thing as everything. I mean, people tell me I find a problem praying, let's say, for even 30 minutes. It's because you've not done it for a while. The day you start praying 30 minutes, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times in a row, it will become pleasurable. And you'll actually force yourself, there have been times when I'm praying and I have to wake up early the next day and I have to force myself to stop praying, but I was enjoying it. I was having fun and I could have continued all night. But I have to get some sleep because in the morning I have to do something. So I say, now let me go and get some sleep, even if I was still enjoying this. Now, has it always been like that? No. I also started struggling. But after some time, you develop it and it becomes an enjoyable thing, just like everything else. If you went to go and start jogging, the first time you go and jog, it's a problem. But continue doing it for 6 months. Now, when you do it for 6 months, when you don't do it, it's a problem. You will feel bad. You will feel there is something wrong with you because you've not jogged. But at the beginning, you were struggling. So it is you have to choose to pass through that initial phase where you're struggling in order to get to the other place of comfort. That's how it is, even with the giving thing. So God tells you give this, you give it. He tells you give this, you painfully give it. Painfully give. After some time you realize that your financial state is improving, and now you can even, there was a time being there without any money in my pocket would scare me, but now it doesn't. If I had let's say 200,000 and I felt the Lord needed me to give it, I would give it and remain with zero. It does not scare me at all because I know that God knows a few minutes from now I need to go and have a cup of coffee, so you must make sure that I have the money. Why? Because your word says I will not leave you without support. Hebrews 13:5, it says I will not leave you without support. Never. You read in the African version, I'll never leave you nor forsake you. I'll not leave you without support. I'll never. Now God has given me his word. So if he tells me give this man, I say, no problem, I'll give that. What if I remain with nothing? No problem. God knows I have nothing. So if my car is running short on fuel, I say, God, I kind of need fuel right now because I still have these things to do. And I even don't say that, by the way. I know that I expect that there is going to be fuel. So sometimes I wake up in the morning and I expect there is going to be money. Why? Because I know God said he cannot leave me without support. And he is God. He does not lie. He is God. So I say, okay, now, because I need money, it is going to show up. Now, is that something that you have to get to that position? Because it is a struggle at the beginning. Now, I'm telling you this because some people start well now, but they don't go through the period of struggle. They don't go through the period of struggle. Everybody starts going to the gym, but very few people continue going to the gym. And it is only those who continue going to the gym who turn out very fit. Now, if you wake up in the morning and you see the people who are jogging on the roads, it's people who don't need to jog. Now, people who are fat and have pot bellies who need to be jogging are not jogging. But you see, that's why the other people look that way, because they have made it a consistent thing. Now, these other people it's not that they've not ever started. They start. So I'm going to start. Now, next week, I'm going to start going to the gym. So you go once, then your muscles are paining all over and what? And you need to go the second time, and the third time they will stop paining, and the fourth time you will still force yourself, and the fifth time, by the time you get to the 20th time, you are enjoying the gym, and you actually can't wait for the evening to go and have a nice time in the gym. But you never get to that stage because you stop at the second time. Now that is the sad thing about life. So many, very few people go through that initial stage. Okay? Very few people go. Now, so many people, when you talk about partnering, now I'll tell you this, only about 20% of the people who started partnering with the Watchman are still partnering. Do we still have partners? Yes, we do, but they are new ones. The thing is that if the people who started now, but they are those who have been faithful throughout and I am sure they have seen an increase. And that's why now they started, they determine the first time you give, the second time you give, the third time you give, maybe even you're not really seeing anything, but you believe, and now you're convinced and you're persuaded that this is the way to go. Now by the time you reach the fifth time, you're beginning to see dividends. By the time you reach the 10th time, the 10th month of partnering, you're actually seeing really good dividends. And now, nobody forces you to give. You are very excited to give because you've already seen, you know, what comes out of it. But how many people go through that period? Not that many, unfortunately. Not that many. Many people will do it the first time, the second time, the third time, then they stop. Then they hear a good sermon on giving, then they give the first time, the second time, the third time, then they stop. Then they give here a good sermon on giving, then they give a first time saying, now they have given, but they are not benefiting. Why? Because there is no consistency. They might benefit here and there, of course, because every seed yields fruit. But you're not going to get anything. Nothing. And you know that from business, from prayer, from reading the Bible, unless there is an element of consistency, there is never going to be any real sustained benefit that you can hold on to. So when I tell you here, in this place, that you should about the whole thing of giving. Some people came to our Watchman Partners meeting and were saying, how much do we need, and how, you know, aren't we going to make pledges? I told them, where we come from, we don't make pledges, because I ask people to sow. Now, a pledge is what you give at a wedding meeting to a friend, okay? You are not giving me a pledge. You are not giving. You are giving to God, and you are not donating money. You are sowing money. Sowing means that you expect to receive. Now I want everybody to receive who sows, because nobody has money to waste. Even me, when I give money, and I do give money, I don't give it because I don't need it. I give it because I am sowing it, and I expect a dividend later. Okay, and I expect a dividend later, and I will need that dividend, or rather that harvest when it comes. So I give, and sometimes also painfully, but not as painfully now as it used to be at the beginning, because right now I've begun to see the dividends of living that lifestyle. Now, we look at the bills that we had, for instance, for the Watchman conference, and we are collecting money, and we collect the first. And people come and give seed and give seed and give seed. Then we get, I believe I got the first 2 or 3 million I got, I sold it, because we needed much more than that. So I got what we had and sold it into good ground. Now, I believe the things I'm telling you about. If I wasn't believing them, I would not be preaching them. I live that life. I know what it means to sow and expect a harvest. And I know that God is faithful. I know where good ground is. And I know that as long as you sow into good ground, you will receive a harvest, and you receive it at the time when you need it, when you are absolutely need it. And you might even have forgotten that this money that I got right now was from a seed that I sowed. But you might forget the seed, but God can never forget a seed. He will never forget a seed. Never. So when you sow it into good ground, it will be there, yielding, and at some stage, when you are in a tight spot, money shows up somewhere, and you thank God. You don't know you're actually harvesting, and thank God, of course, you're supposed to thank Him, but you don't know you're harvesting from a plantation which you sowed in some time ago. So these are things, these are principles by which we live. These are not things we just teach, okay, for the benefit of for our own benefit. I believe in these things, and I know that they absolutely work. I trust God. I trust Him with my finances. I surrendered that to Him. I said, now that is it. There it is. Finances, that's your business. Now, was it a difficult thing? It was. I'll be very honest with you. There is not a single man who finds it easy to trust, totally trust. And by trust, I mean completely trust God with your finances. I remember a time when, I perhaps told this story before here, when I needed some money urgently, and it was urgent. So I prayed, I said, God, I believe you for this money. And I trusted God. But as soon as I finished praying, something happened. I, I, started, I got into doubt. I got out of faith and went into doubt. So I knew some rich man who could lend me that money. So I actually called him and told him, I want you to lend me money. He said, no problem. You come and I'll give you the money. So I went there. Now, the man refused to give me the money. First of all, he told me, no, I'll come tomorrow. Then I realized he was playing games. Then I stopped going. And then I realized later, now, the deadline arrived when I was supposed to pay the money, and the other guy had given me the money, and now I'd taken my trust away from God to that guy. Can you believe that? So, and the guy let me down. Now on Monday, I go back to God and say, Lord, now I need to pay this money urgently. Then God told me that, why didn't you trust me in the first place? Why do you trust the other guy more than me? Is he more trustworthy than I am? Then he told me, when the other guy told you he's going to give you the money, you even relaxed and settled and even got off pressure because you were depending on the other guy and he has let you down. Now he said, if you could only get as comfortable as that when you're trusting me. Oh man, I felt so bad because the Lord challenged me. You see, when he said he's going to give you the money, you even relaxed because you trust him. But can't you trust me like that? As in, do you find it easier to trust men than to trust me? So I knelt down and said, God, help me to learn how to trust you. And I'm telling you, when it comes to the issue, for so many people, when it comes to the issue of money, there is a serious trust problem. Can you trust God with that thing? I mean, can you really trust God and say, okay, God, I'm feeling kind of led to give this. Of course, the devil is not going to lead you to give anything. Okay? He doesn't want you to give. I'm feeling led to give this for this purpose. But I need it. I really, really need it. And if I give it, you know I am totally dependent on you because it is like I'm hanging on to it. Now, those things which you're hanging on to are the ones you actually... Now, you have to get to a point where the bonito things you're hanging on to are the ones you give to get over that stinginess, which everyone of us has, by the way. So now, if I have 200,000 on me and I feel led to give 100,000, then I start saying, now if I give 100,000, the other 100,000, I have to use 50,000 for fuel. Now, will the other 50,000 be enough? Now, once I get into that reasoning, I will not give 100,000, I will give all the 200,000. And I have done that someday, because why do I do that? Because I want to get rid of that stinginess until my heart stops holding on to Kamane. This Kamane of mine is what I have, you know, and your heart is holding on to it because you don't want to give it. Now the Bible says where your treasures is where your heart is. So you make that little money you have like the source of, and it's not going to solve all your problems. You need more than that, and you know it. You need more than 200,000. I said, no. If the devil is trying to tell me not to give this 100,000, or not even the devil, or myself, my heart is telling me not to give this 200,000. I mean, this 100,000, I'll give all the 200,000 until you get rid of that stinginess, which we all have, and which is natural, by the way. Those are natural tendencies. So, and it's not easy for anybody to get to this stage where you absolutely trust God for everything, where you get to a position where you trust God. And I'm still learning to get there, by the way. It is not easy at all, because every single time you have to overcome this obstacle of how can you do this, how can you do this. You're looking for money, how can you give away money, yet you're actually looking for money. Now, you need, let's say, 40 million for the conference, and you have 3 million, how do you give away the 3 million? When you need 40 million. Now, if you had not given out the 3 million, you'd be needing 37 million. But now you've given out the 3 million, now you still need 40 million. Now, and your mind gets into it and gets very active, and if you're not careful, you'll hold on to that money, and it is not enough. But what I do is I give it. And when I give it, I believe God that He will give me the other one which I need, because I've sowed into good ground. Anyway, I'm doing this to encourage you. Now, if you want to sow into the Watchman Conference, you have 1 week left. You have an opportunity of 1 week left. I am telling you, this is very good ground, extremely good ground. 1 week. 1 week left. Between now and let's say even less than a week, 6 days, between now and Tuesday, you have an opportunity to sow into the Watchman Conference. Here is how you are going to do it. Send that seed to this number, which I've been giving you all along. Here is the number. Write it down if you must. Even if you don't feel like you're led right now, write down this number. You might be led at some stage later. The number is 0780 then 292 555. I'll say it again: 0780 292 555. If you send the other way, it is registered in my name is Joseph Kableta. So that way you make sure you don't send to the wrong person. Now, send money, send your seed for the Watchman Conference. You still have an opportunity to sow into the conference. You still have an opportunity to reap off this harvest. And I promise you, this is good ground. We are doing everything the way God has told us to do it. That makes it good ground. Okay, so be touched. Don't let yourself be overcome with that stinginess. Free yourself. Let this be the beginning of that area of letting yourself free and trusting God with that precious finance thing of yours, which you're holding so dear. But you're struggling. But you're holding on to your means. You're holding on to your way of doing things. But you actually are struggling. So instead of continuing struggling, try God. And remember, it's money. He says, test me in this. So try God. Try getting off the Babylonian system. Trying saying, now God, I am going to trust you. Let me see how this works. Okay? And God is faithful. He will make it work. Send your seed, okay, to that number. If you don't, if the seed is bigger than what can be carried on mobile money, it's okay. Call that number and tell the person how you can give. Any other way, the person who handles the number, it is not me, but it is somebody who is doing it right now. So call that person and tell him that I have this seed, how can I pass it on to you, and you'll come up with a way. That the number again, I will end with this, is 0780 292 555. Do that and you will see a blessing, a tremendous increase. God bless you.
Do you want to see how Bible prophecy fits perfectly into contemporary news? What's this business about the Antichrist and the mark of the beast? Who is the Antichrist? Be him alive? How shall the number 666 be introduced in commerce? The Watchman dissects fascinating insights into the end times and Bible prophecy. Make a debt with the Watchman every Wednesday, 9 to 10 p.m. only on Spirit FM 96.6. Tune in and stay on.